The State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Bruzada Carrera.
Here.
Vice Chair Mooney.
Here.
Ranking Member Robinson.
Here.
Representatives Arrington.
Here.
Barrero.
Here.
Chamberlain.
Here.
Edmonds. Harris.
Here.
Holcomb.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
Maney. Nixon. Kirsten Solinka.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Stevenson.
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members, and by your presence, we have a quorum. I want to welcome everyone to the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Before we begin today, I would like to welcome our newest member, Representative Chamberlain. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, members, today we will hear from four of our agencies on their budget requests for the 2024-2025 fiscal year. On a statewide basis, agencies are asking for over $5.8 billion of additional general revenue spending and $22.8 billion of additional trust fund spending over the base budget. Within our subcommittee, the 12 agencies under our jurisdiction are requesting an additional $483 million from general revenue, as well as $184 million from trust funds. As we listen to the presentations, I want to remind you about the long-range financial outlook that was issued earlier this fall by the Legislative Budget Commission. The outlook focused primarily on the general revenue fund, and it showed that our state budget is in good shape with positive ending balances projected for the next 3 years. Despite that good news, the outlook also revealed that projected expenditures are beginning to outpace revenues, particularly for recurring spending. Members, this means that we need to be cautious as we develop next year's budget, and we need to be mindful of the out-year impacts of our spending decisions. With that context in mind, I want to welcome the agencies that have joined us here this morning. And members, we'll go through each presentation in its entirety, and then at the end of that presentation is when I'll ask if anyone has questions, that way we're not going throughout the presentation. So first up, we have Secretary Melanie Griffin from Department of Business and Professional Regulation. You are recognized.
And Ranking Member Robinson, and all the others, distinguished members of the subcommittee. Thank you for the opportunity to present here and be here today to show you DBPR's budget for, or proposed budget for the 2024-2025 fiscal year. For those whom I haven't had the pleasure of meeting, I'm Melanie Griffin, and I am thrilled to lead the agency that plays such a critical role in business growth and professional success for so many Floridians. In January 2022, I had the honor of being appointed as DBPR Secretary by Governor DeSantis. I'm excited about all the great things our agency continues to accomplish for Florida's business and professional communities, and I thank the governor for his leadership. As you know, the DBPR is the agency charged with licensing and regulating businesses and professionals in the state of Florida. The mission of DBPR is to license efficiently and regulate fairly, and we strive to do this in our day-to-day operations. We are responsible for ensuring that nearly 1.7 million licensees across more than 30 fields of industry provide safe, quality services to Florida's millions of residents and visitors, an increase of nearly 300,000 licensees since Governor DeSantis took office in January of 2019. Working. I'm always happy when technology works. So if you look at slide one with me, you'll see that this year we are requesting a total of $187,777,100, which is broken between general revenue and our state trust funds, and then 1,582.25 FTEs. On slide two, in the first 10 slides that we'll go to together, with this being the first of the 10, are our top priorities. And so with this first one, you'll see that we're requesting $1.1 million in non-recurring budget authority, which will provide for DBPR's Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco to hire 20 OPS positions across 12 offices around the state, where DBPR and ABT have a presence to assist with licensure application processing. drinking. DBPR's Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco issues licenses or permits that are required for any business or person to manufacture, import, export, store, distribute, or sell alcoholic beverages or products containing tobacco or nicotine. ABT's Bureau of Licensing has worked hard to reduce vacancies for application processing positions, which have been challenging positions for the Bureau to fill. They reached a high of 65% this past February. So 17 of our Bureau's positions that are currently filled, we did reduce that vacancy rate to less than 10%, but 17 of our 32.5 positions were hired just within the last year. As demand for licensure increases, so does the backlog and wait time for licensure approval. This request for 1 year of OPS help will allow DBPR to address a current licensing backlog. Our second priority is an additional 5 FTEs, along with the related budget authority for our Division of Regulation, which is the enforcement authority for the professional boards and programs that DBPR oversees. Due to increases in the number of mandatory inspections and complaints received by the division, several DBPR field offices are experiencing shortfalls, having to use inspectors from other regions of the state to supplement necessary workload. This funding will reduce backlogs, lessen workloads for current employees, improve overall morale, and help with the retention of qualified staff. Our third priority is for the Division of Technology. 2 FTEs are requested for being dedicated to improving the department's security maturity level, helping to protect our security perimeter from threat actors. There are an additional 2 FTEs that are very important for our help desk that would assist with advanced troubleshooting and research support, which will result in quicker resolution times for department technology needs, and of course then our licensure and helping Floridians. Our fourth priority is competitive pay for over $1.5 million in recurring budget authority, along with the related salary rate for 6 areas of the department where there has been a historically hard time recruiting and retaining qualified staff. This request will go a long way in helping reduce high turnover and vacancy rates, leading to a more productive department, accomplishing our mission more efficiently. Our next priority is a budget increase that is necessary to recruit and hire for current vacant positions that are needed to meet the agency's goals of streamlining government and protecting the health and safety of Floridians. This would align our current budget with authorized FTE and salary rate so that we could use that authorized budget. Our next priority is to request 2 FTEs and related budget authority for DBPR's Division of Professions, which is responsible for licensing. Excuse me, I was so excited about presenting this morning. I've been practicing this too much. A little frog in my throat this morning. Which is responsible for the licensing of over 503,000 professionals, along with the administration of 12 professional licensing boards. As you can see in the second bullet on the slide, due to the success of prior legislation allowing for licensure by endorsement for several professions within the division, there has been a steady increase in the number of applications coming into the department. Without additional FTE, the chance of applications being approved to applicants who might not be qualified or have the required credentials to enter the respective professions will increase due to the 90-day mandated timeframe in which applications must be reviewed. Our next slide relates to our Division of Drugs, Devices, and Cosmetics, also known as DDC. This division is responsible for safeguarding the health, safety, and welfare of residents and visitors of the state of Florida from injury due to the use of adulterated, contaminated, misbranded drugs, drug ingredients, and cosmetics by administering the professions of the Florida Drug and Cosmetic Act. Without this new application processor, which is requested in this funding, DDC will struggle to maintain timely processing of applications. Our next priority again relates to the Division of Technology. This slide shows an increase in the contracted services appropriation category for the Division of Technology to ensure there is sufficient budget authority to address cost increases related to departmental contracts and agreements, along with annual cost increases for various software maintenance and subscriptions. Our next request is for the acquisition of motor vehicles for our Bureau of Enforcement, which promotes and enforces the safe and responsible operation of locations where alcoholic beverages, tobacco, and nicotine products are sold, on top of conducting routine inspections and investigating alleged license or permit violations and related criminal activity. The Bureau of Enforcement is in DBPR's Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco. Due to increases in vehicle costs, this request is necessary for the Bureau of Enforcement to maintain their vehicle replacement schedule for both their sworn and non-sworn personnel to be able to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public. The next priority will authorize the acquisition of a truck and mobile office trailer for the department responsible for emergencies, natural disasters, and for program outreach. For example, educating the public against unlicensed activity. This purchase will allow the department to have a noticeable presence at disaster response and outreach events, making it easier for licensees and constituents to locate us. And on this slide, you have the remainder of the department's legislative budget requests. I would like to draw your attention in particular to two requests that are new from the department, which are on lines 3 and 4 on this slide regarding replacement of forfeiture funds. The department is requesting funds for training and equipment to replace funding that has historically come from a federal equitable sharing program. This funding is essential to provide training and equipment for the department's 105 law enforcement personnel. The department has recently been notified by the federal government that it is no longer eligible to participate in this program, despite currently participating in federal task forces and having a sound track record of past participation and cooperation with federal partners. We are currently protesting this decision and petitioning the Department of Justice to reverse their decision. The funding comes from the seizure and forfeiture of assets in criminal investigations. The funds are distributed to participating law enforcement agencies, which has historically included DBPR. Shown here, you will, last slide, we'll be reviewing together. Shown here, you will find a comparison of what the department is requesting for fiscal year 2024-2025 versus what the legislature has appropriated DBPR for the current fiscal year. One major discrepancy you will see is the much lower request in the general revenue category for next fiscal year. As you will remember, last session, the legislature passed House Bill 1091, an act relating to licensee fee relief, which appropriated DBPR $50 million and required us to waive for the 2023-24 and 2024-25 fiscal years 50% of the initial licensing fee for a new applicant and also waive 50% of a licensee's license renewal fee. Due to the fiscal responsibility and strong economic policies of Florida's governor and the Florida legislature, DBPR is lucky to be able to provide this relief to Florida business owners and employers. And lastly, I should thank our staff who is here with me today. We have our Deputy Legislative Affairs Director, Chris Kingery, our gubernatorial fellow, Brooks Elon, our Chief of Staff, Tyler Russell, and our budget guru, Lynn Smith, and myself are all here and available to answer questions. And of course, Chris's contact information is up here should you think of anything after this presentation that we can help you with related to budget or otherwise. Madam Chair, I'll defer back to you.
Thank you, Secretary. I did have a question. On slide 11, you mentioned a budget request for post-natural disaster program outreach. If you could just explain that and what type of work you guys are doing after a natural disaster.
Absolutely. So with the natural disasters, many people may not realize, I'm not sure if I'm on the right slide. Here we go. I believe this is it, or somewhere around here. But anyway, point being is that we are in the field oftentimes for up to 1 to 2 years after natural disasters. So for instance, although Idalia is certainly at the forefront of minds that should be, our team continues to be in Southwest Florida following Hurricane Ian as well. Because oftentimes the monies that are received, say from insurance policies, come several months after a storm, and that's when bad actors tend to flood the state and prey on our most vulnerable communities. And so DBPR works really hard to be in those communities, both looking for bad actors that we get complaints about to make sure that we eradicate that activity as best as possible from our state, as well as to do proactive sweeps and stings to make sure that, again, we're trying to catch those bad actors in the act and make sure that they aren't having that activity in our state.
Thank you. Representative Robinson, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for giving a great presentation. Just wanted to see if you can give us some explanation or details on the slides 5 and 6, where you talk about the different areas. One of them says 6 areas, the other one says multiple areas. What departments are we looking at increasing the salary rate?
Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you, and great question. So on slide five, which I have successfully flipped to this time, the six areas are, three of them all relate to our Office of General Counsel, thanks to the legislature and the discretionary pay that was implemented as of October 1st. This is becoming better for the department, but historically, we were usually either the last or second to last Office of General Counsel in terms of state pay that made recruiting and retention extremely difficult. Because of the discretionary pay, we've been able to catch up certain positions within our Office of General Counsel, but the ones that are not yet caught up, that are three of those categories, relate to administrative staff and four chief legal positions in our general, overall general counsel, our CPA, and Division of Real Estate Legal Units. So those are three of the six. The other three also then relate to our ABT division, specifically to our licensing and auditing bureaus, and then to our CTMH division as well.
Members, any further questions? Well, thank you, Secretary. We appreciate your time today. You and your team have prepared a wonderful presentation.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Okay, members, next up we have Executive Director Dr. Jim Zingel from the Department of Revenue.
We will wait till we get to the slides. Good morning.
Good morning.
I can't talk and move my hands at the same time, so I need help. I'm Jim Zingale, Executive Director of the Department of Revenue. Little background, this is my 51st session. Excited to be here. That's a long time. I'm an old man. Got my roots up here in the legislative process that first year. I spent 18 years in the legislature as staff. Started over on the Senate side, worked my way up to Ways and Means Deputy Director. Was the first Amy Baker. I loved the presentation she gave on the financial outlook of the state for the next 5 years. I was the first EDR director in another life. Then I came over here and spent 4 years on the appropriations suite as the appropriations staff director. So my last job in the legislature was here. I say that because my presentation and the way we approach budgeting is somewhat different from a lot of state agencies. We approach it, since I came back 5 years ago, as if I was the appropriations staff director. So these are the kind of rules that govern how we develop the budget. As you said, general revenue recurring is sacred. We look at it, we try to reduce it, we try to husband the use of it. When we do have increases, we try to come with you and prepare budget cuts to offset those increases. And we truly do recommend the ones you see in here, feel free to take. We don't believe they'll damage programs. When we do fund issues, we try to fund them first from the trust-funded sources we have, not from the general revenue. The other thing I do because of that background is I apologize for the presentations. They are not what my staff would have brought up here. They look like spreadsheets and worksheets of a staffer. That's because that's how I think. And when I look down, if I don't see a spreadsheet, I forget what I'm supposed to be saying. So they don't look quite as jazzy as the other ones do. But with that said, we are the fifth largest, maybe sixth largest state agency in state government. We are the largest agency in your program. Our total operating budget is $668 million. We have over 5,000 employees. That said, let me talk a little bit about the three programs we have at the operating level. The first program is Child Support Enforcement. It is a federal program. I believe we are the only major federal trust fund that you have in your 12 programs in the subcommittee. That said, why is that important? It's funded two-thirds from federal sources and one-third from state sources. If you look at the general tax program, it's also got a little over 2,000 employees, but it's smaller than child support. Our largest program in the department is child support, not tax. You wouldn't think that intuitively. Then we have a teeny little program. It does cause a lot of time and effort and energy to it, and that's property tax. We not only do the oversight of tax collectors and property appraisers, 100% general revenue funded, but the nature of the business of ad valorem tax, we are heavily linked into EDR and the estimating process. We got to provide all the support on the fiscal analysis of all the tax legislation that goes through. So three programs, two big ones, one little one. That said, if you look down on the first page, the way the presentation the chairman was going over, we do list fairly closely recurring GR, and we separate out state trust from federal. If you look at the far right-hand side, you'll see our largest program, child support, is 48% of the funding, 2,200 employees, $324 million. General tax is only 40% of our programs. Again, $271 million, 2,146 positions, and that teeny little property tax. The surprise is over there on the left-hand side, I think. If you looked at GR, GR is only 34% of our budget, $234 million. Federal trust funds is the largest proportion of our budget, 280. And GR is the engine that draws that match down. And state trust is primarily on the tax side. As we administer the tax dollars, we draw down administrative fees to help regulate that. So that's the big picture. If you go there and look at the quick lines at the top, one, two, three, four, down as you're going across, the three operating programs, you will see very small, teeny, relatively modest increases in the recurring budget. If you look down, though, at four and five, you will see on the IT side, our biggest increase on the recurring side is coming from operations in IT. We'll go over that on each page. $7.8 million, another $12 million in non-recurring, and off to the far right, you'll see $36 million in non-recurring coming from state trust, federal trust. That's primarily on the child support side. We do have a compensation issue. We truly want to thank the legislature for what it's done for state employees in the last 2 years. The across-the-board pay raises have enabled us to compete much more effectively in the marketplace. The special pay adjustments this committee allowed us to have in our RS series and a number of our series has dramatically brought down our vacancy rate, and we're appreciative of that. We have one issue left. We hope you give it favorable consideration. Okay, now fairly quick, and I'm only going to highlight some of the major details on the big programs, but the second slide, if you have it up there, and you do, the second slide is child support. If you look down, I'm only going to highlight three issues. The first issue there is $752,000, 250 of it in recurring GR for security guards. Okay, when COVID hit us, when we closed the offices down, well, we eliminated our need for guards in those offices. It's a pretty stressful job working child support. We have 27 offices throughout the state. There has been a return to traffic in those offices. We not only want to keep our employees safe, but we want to keep the people that are safe within there. We do get threats on an ongoing basis. It's the only major program we have in revenue that does. And issue number one is to go back and return in some of these offices that have shown a need, security guards. The third issue, wage inflation on our major contracts, is just wage inflation. And the fourth one is 10 hearing officers in the child support program. This is a mirror issue. We've been dealing with the state court administrator. It's a workload issue, and it's a mirror-funded issue. They have the positions, we provide the funding, and the match goes over. You see down at the bottom, 6 through 10 are recommended cuts. If you would look at the recurring GR piece, the recurring increases we're asking for, at least on the recurring side, are offset by cuts, if you chose to take them. Second program is general tax. Again, I'm only going to identify item number two. You see a placeholder one, and this is fairly late in the game to have a placeholder, but we had to, that contract expired. We've been under negotiations with two vendors for the continuation of that contract. It's a major contract. It's the one that houses the $64 billion that comes into the state and leaves the state. And right now, we don't choose to want to put a number in here until we get a little further down the road. We think we'll have that available in a few months, certainly before the session ends. Again, that's a $330,000 issue is the only one you see jump up there. That's a postal rate increase. Number four on there, emergency distribution. This is an REC issue. REC comes in, they put a number on it every year. It tends to grow every year, and we put the number down. Okay, we provided cuts there again on the recurring GR side, netting negative for the issues we've asked for, and the cuts are down at the bottom. Okay, now we deal with the teeny little program property tax. All funded GR. There's no major significant trust fund funding in there. On the GR side, only one issue. Central assessing. Property is assessed in the state of Florida by property appraisers in 67 counties, except for railroad lines. The railroad lines, because they cut across counties, the Department of Revenue provides the assessment on those railroad lines as they're cutting through counties. That said, we typically have litigation, okay? That's a placeholder number there you're seeing on the 319. Why? We have had open litigations going on right now with four, and those four litigations that we're going through, we believe we have settled on a methodology that in the future may cause fewer litigations, okay? This number here is the number that we would be asking for with the ones we have pending if they don't drop. Okay, that said, no cuts provided in that program, but from the numbers that the chairman went over in terms of the size of the committee, we're a little different in non-recurring funding. Here in items 2, 3, and 4, okay, you have mandatory state programs. Okay, these are mandatory state programs. The fiscally constrained county is the general revenue dollars the state puts in to offset the fiscally constrained county's loss in property tax base that came from some of the constitutional amendments. It is a recurring program. This committee and other and the legislature as a whole for years has chosen to fund that with non-recurring dollars, even though it's a recurring program. So it drops off every year and we have to ask for it again. That $70.6 million is an REC estimate, as is the $1.2. We do have also a statutory obligation to fly the state to assist the property appraisers to take aerial photos, and the dollar amount for that in the year's flights coming up is $922,000. Total $72.8 million in non-recurring. Again, that's only a slight increase from last year's non-recurring, and I know that sounds very strange, but because it's a recurring program that drops out and then has to be self-funded. Estimates that the REC made last year for the current year we're in were understated, okay? If you choose to want to fund that deficit in the current year, that would be a $16.6 million back of the bill appropriation for the current year. If you don't fund it, we'll have to take the dollars that are there and prorate it across the counties. That's property tax. So far, not much in there. Now you look at what looks to be a really small program, okay, but it's our IT operation. This is a little historic background, if you will. One of the catch-22s of being really old and here for a long time, back in the 90s, the Department of Revenue, working hand-in-hand with the legislature, went through not only a reorganization of general tax and child support, but with the Bush cabinet, came forward and said, we are going to fund state-of-the-art computer systems. And in the 90s, after we reorganized the agencies and passed the laws, we stood up in 8 years the SunTax system. Okay, it is an ERP and it is run by SAP. First one in the country that in a state agency built a computer system in SAP, and I'm happy with that. The other one was CAMS. The child support program came over. It didn't have much of a computer system, and that was also funded. The bid brought us SAP. Why I say that is that you'd sit there and go, oh my God, that's a 30-year-old system. Should we be worried about them asking to replace that entire system in the future? Answer is no. The nature of the SAP system and the why it was purchased back then, it's a COTS solution, strange word, But if you look at it today, it has become the largest supplier of financial services in the world. Okay? The nature of that system, it's kind of like the tools you have on your PC. Every year it gets improved. And so for most of the year since we stood the system up, we haven't come back and asked for major funding for those programs. However, you're at a stage right now where SAP in both of the two programs is doing a major modernization of their database, a major modernization of their operating system, and a continuous migration to the cloud. Those three efforts have been going on in the current year, a little bit planning for last year, and will continue out for the next few years. So if you look at that first item there, you see CAMS, the child support system, S4 upgrade, that's their operating system, and that's $46 million. Okay, $11 million non-recurring GR and $34 million recurring federal funds. Okay, we view that as a mandatory increase because we need to do that upgrade to stay in the system. Same thing with SunText, that it's the stage where they're updating their database. Okay, the third operating system we have is in property tax. It's very small. It's moving its way away from spreadsheets into a database manager. That database manager is going to cost $3.6 million, critically necessary for a number of reasons, not only to help us run the property tax program, but that's the database that shares the database with your staff in terms of fiscal analysis that go into the ad valorem bills, also to interface with the property appraisers, and then to go over to Amy and EDR and do that. With that, we were going to talk a little bit about replacing existing IT. The ShareWell system is closing down, and we have to replace that system for another $891 million. We have a agency-wide virtual assistance. We have had very good success piloting AI, if you will, on our call centers. It works. They're capable of coming in, and you can call Dora up on the child support system and gets very accurate responses, so much that we want to move that into a couple of the other programs. We also have want to expand the technology. You've allowed us, particularly on the tax side and other areas, to do electronic communication, save postage. That system upgrade would like us to do that. 9 through 13, you can kind of see them there. The first one, though, is asking for 8 positions in our cyber unit. With that, Madam Chairman, I will answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Director. Members, are there any questions for Director Zingale? No, seeing none. All right, Representative Edmonds, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great presentation, by the way. When we're looking at line 6, implement agency-wide virtual assistant. I'm glad we're moving towards AI. I think it's great possibilities with it. Is that actually taking any positions from regular people, though, as we continue to automate things?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, sure.
You recognize.
Forgot being on this side, that side. Thank you. If you look at it this way, I asked the staff to go back and give me a 10-year analysis of FTE in the department. Okay, and if you look today at the first page, I think it's saying we have 5,000 employees in the Department of Revenue. If you go back 10 years ago, we actually have less, about 150 less than we did 10 years ago. Why that is, if you'd step back and look at the state of Florida in that 10 years grew 3 million people. Okay, if you look at the registered taxpayers that we have on that system, it paralleled it. If you look at the growth in the revenues that are coming into the state of Florida from that 10 years, it went from something like $48 million to $90 million or billion. So the state's growing rapidly. We're able to do it without coming and having to ask for significant positions every year, and a lot of it's because of that technology. So. Do we believe where we sit today, we're able to provide those services? Absolutely. Why the AI works so effectively for us in the call center isn't that we're going to be coming back and giving up people. It's that right now that AI is answering questions is as effective manner, and call center employees are the hardest ones to hire. Okay, you helped us with the RS series to get them pay raises, and that stopped them leaving. Those aren't fun calls. So it isn't like we're losing people or laying people off because we're putting AI in place. The reality is it's allowing us to answer the volume of phone calls we have today because we're having difficulty filling those positions.
Follow-up, Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On line five, if we're replacing the IT service management platform, do you have suggestions on who we're going to replace or what company is going to replace it?
Director?
May I get some help?
Yes.
Clark, any thoughts?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
We have about three vendors we're looking at on various contracts right now, but we have a selected one.
If you could address the committee by coming up to the podium.
Make sure you fill out a card.
We're looking at about three solutions right now on various contracts. We have not selected one, but that's what the pricing was based on. So until we do a formal request for quote, I'd be glad to talk to you offline about actual names.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, any further questions for the director? Seeing none, thank you so much for your presentation today.
Appreciate it.
Okay, next up, we have Secretary Pedro Allende from Department of Management Services. Come on down.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Morning.
Vice Chair Mooney and Ranking Member Robinson. My name is Pedro Allende, Secretary of the Department of Management Services. Thank you also, members of the committee and the team that has come with me today. Happy to present a brief overview of what DMS is and our budget requests, priorities for this year. DMS is the primary business, workforce, and technology support function of Florida State Government. Proud to work each day to bring efficiencies, create value and cost savings for Florida's taxpayers. The DMS team takes pride in providing excellent customer service and supporting Florida state agencies through innovation and technology. In addition to the offices of the Secretary, General Counsel, Finance Administration, we have three major functions, business operations, workforce operations, and the Florida Digital Service. The slide is a brief history of appropriations. For the current fiscal year, we're at about $889 million. The highest funding amount was fiscal year 22-23, when we had several non-recurring appropriations related to cybersecurity in the state data center. This brief slide shows that we're 74% funded by trust fund and 26% by general revenue. And our overview of the budget request, as you can see here, by the nature of the work that they do, our largest requests are in the business operations and Florida Digital Service areas, followed by workforce operations, and lastly by executive direction. We'll begin with business operations today, which in general focuses on real estate, telecommunications, state purchasing, and fleet. DMS is first requesting $18.8 million to upgrade all public safety answering points in the state's emergency 911 system. It's operated by the Division of Telecommunications within DMS. This would allow 911 calls to be transferred statewide, improving response times when Floridians need it most. We're requesting $12 million in an emergency 911 call routing program for regional call routing. This will further improve emergency response times and efforts by providing a conduit for emergency calls to be transferred between counties, regardless of their current routing capabilities. And last on this slide is a $10.2 million request for additional resources for the state law enforcement radio system, commonly referred to as SLRS. The system is critical to ensuring that law enforcement officers can effectively communicate with each other across jurisdictions and operate in real time. These funds will cover annual maintenance and leasing requirements, as well as construction of a new tower. Notably, this is really important in emergency times, and I'd like to recognize the team's work during Hurricane Ian, really high winds, catastrophic conditions. SLRS was on air 98.87% of the time, and within 48 hours, we were at 100% uptime. That was a real win and provided critical telecommunications in the time Floridians needed it most. Continuing with business operations, we're requesting $8.2 million for facilities maintenance and repair. Next one is $2.2 million in HVAC replacement systems. As you know, a lot of the buildings in the Florida facilities pool are aging and operate on older, less efficient cooling systems. And finally, we're asking for $400,000 for a physical access control system study. This is paramount for safety and security of state employees. The idea here is to conduct a feasibility study, unifying security control systems within the facilities pool, including access control, intrusion detection, and surveillance. Right now, this is not centralized and is run by each agency. Moving to workforce operations, our first request is People First, the state's human resource information system. The program supports over 220,000 employees and more than 1 million applicants annually. Provides critical services such as payroll, benefits administration, timekeeping, and other similar HR functions. The existing platform is at end of life very soon, and the contract with the current vendor is expiring. And so we're asking for an amount to determine at a later date to modernize the system, including support on re-procurement, and move the HRIS into the next generation. In support of the state personnel system, we asked for $3.2 million to continue the next phase of fixing the SPS. This is a 20-year system that has not evolved with the state's workforce. The state personnel system can use an overhaul, I think would be fair to say. And a new updated system will create efficiencies, improve analytics, and enhance critical recruitment and retention efforts within the state. Through consistency in job classifications and creating transparent career paths for high-performing employees. And in keeping with our commitment to the state's workforce, we're requesting $1.2 for an online tool to help employees navigate available insurance options through the state group insurance program, help them make informed decisions about which options make the most sense for them. This also has the added benefit of creating cost savings for both employees and the state when you right-size the coverage that employees choose for themselves and their families. And this request also includes a benefits consultant to assist in the program on continuous identification of best practices and cost containment options. Finally, for the Division of Retirement, we're requesting $1.3 million for a comprehensive contact center solution. Currently, the contact center is disparate. It's not a unified system. And that unified access point would ensure more efficiency through voice, text, email, chat services to the 1.1 million active members and retirees served by the Division of Retirement. Next, the Florida Digital Service. Following the governor's call to modernize technology in state government, the legislature created the Florida Digital Service to lead the state's efforts in cybersecurity, data interoperability, and IT project oversight. In a few short years, FLDS has created the first state cybersecurity operations center, the CSOC, which has assisted over 30 state agencies and nearly 200 local governments in sharing information and bolstering their security posture. I'd be remiss if I didn't also recognize the intense effort of the Lieutenant Governor in this space. And her relentless work on cybersecurity, including her leadership on the Florida Cybersecurity Advisory Task Council and the task force before it. DMS is requesting a $15 million increase to enhance existing solutions within the CSOC, fine-tune our tools, and then continue to build upon that with new solutions. This is the central point for receiving information on threats and vulnerabilities, sharing intelligence with agencies, and coordinating incident response, state cybersecurity operations, and protecting Floridians' data. This request also includes funds to implement additional cybersecurity responsibilities outlined in statute. DMS is also requesting $35 million to continue the administration and another year of the local cybersecurity grant program, which offers counties and municipalities, many of whom lack the funds and staffing to set up security for themselves, the opportunity to do so and share threat intelligence. To stay ahead of evolving threats, we're requesting $6 million in 3FTE to develop a function within the Florida Digital Service to conduct research and actual testing and evaluation of new and emerging technologies. And that would largely be driven by the demands of what is deployed across the state or looking to be deployed across the state. And lastly, we're requesting $1 million to procure federated data management advisory services to ensure the data catalog continues to align with best practices and create efficiencies. And so, Madam Chair, that concludes my presentation. Before yielding, I'd like to thank the team here and at the office for the work in preparing our work and our request this session, and specifically recognize our CFO, Lance Dial, and Budget Director, Nancy Kosen, whose work was imperative on this effort. So.
Thank you, Secretary. Members, are there any questions for the Secretary? Representative Maney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so that I understand, the enterprise cybersecurity resiliency covers only the executive agencies. Is that correct? It doesn't cover cybersecurity for the legislative branch or the judicial branch?
Secretary?
Madam Chair, Representative, not exactly. We do provide additional tools to the legislative branch. They're just not obligated to use them. So our help is there. We have supported in terms of certain licenses and incident response, I would say.
Follow-up, Representative Maney?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. But you don't do anything then with the judiciary branch at all?
Secretary?
On request, we can handle certain issues with them and for them. We try to keep our focus on the enterprise and enterprise agencies and those within our direct purview, but there are instances where we would come in and support.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Help me understand, for example, on number six, where it says emergency 911 public safety point upgrade, $18.8 million. It says phase one. So I'm assuming there's several phases coming, and there's not really a time frame. Like, what kind of time frame can we expect to see the improvements with that $18.8 million, and how are we supposed to think about that?
Sure. So,
Terry?
Sorry. A lot of that work is actually directed through the Emergency Communications Board that was legislatively created last time. I'd have to get back to you. I'm happy to get with you on what the roadmap looks like offline. And give you a more full presentation in your office if you'd like.
Follow-up, Representative?
Yes, thank you. I am interested in understanding that process, and that goes with just a few of these items, so maybe we can visit offline, because, when I see something like $12 million for a call routing system, certainly that's a big figure in my mind, but I know it's a complicated system, but if that $12 million is approved, is that something that happens like this year? Like the routing system is implemented this year? Does it take 5 years to get the routing system in place?
Secretary?
A lot of that is dependent on the different sheriff's offices and county 911 offices. And so we work very collaboratively with them. So it's difficult to give you a precise answer on that, but happy to get back with you and talk through it. I think the completion is a hard deadline to give you, But we would start working towards seeing immediate results very quickly. Or we try not to sit on these.
Follow-up, Representative Chamberlain.
Thank you very much.
Representative Arrington? No? Okay. Representative Steele?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I realize the cost is high on a lot of these things. I've been in this business for a while. On the cybersecurity side and the door access, are you guys using PKI tech for any of it?
Secretary?
You mean the physical access control system feasibility study, or?
So that's one of them. PKI also has certs for cameras, for, you know, any kind of security you can imagine. And it's one of those techs that hadn't been hacked yet, so.
Secretary?
So the interesting part about this is that this is largely done by the different agencies, depending on what specific facility we're talking about. We can give you a bigger lay of the land of what it looks like and walk you through the capital, which is closer between what we do with FDLE. A lot of disparate sort of answers to that question, honestly.
Okay.
Representative Steele, follow up. Members, any further questions for the Secretary? Oh, Representative Edmonds.
I'm so far away. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for your presentation. Could you go to slide 9 really quickly, please? Thank you, Mr. Secretary. When it comes to local government cybersecurity grants, are there any parameters on what type of city, like by population, who can apply for that particular grant?
Secretary?
Well, Representative, for last year's program, the qualification was a municipality, roughly. So we didn't discern between smaller, rural, larger counties. We looked at project need, and that was how the decision was made.
Follow-up, Representative.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Secretary, how is that particular grant promoted? I know there are some smaller cities in my county, like less than 1,000 people, that could really benefit from that. I would love to find it, of course, but how is that promoted?
Secretary?
So we did a series of events with the Lieutenant Governor, myself, the former state CIO, the current state Chief Information Security Officer, went across the state and communicated the availability of the grants. They were promoted through a series of calls with local governments through the Florida, it's FLGIS, I forget what the acronym stands for, but I think it's Local Government Information Systems Association. We made a website available, and we offered basically concierge services to those that were trying to apply. I think the metric was the form was under 30 minutes to go from start to finish to apply. So we made it as simple as we could. So 66 of the 67 counties were represented in the applications. I think pretty good numbers, hopefully to get 67 out of 67 next time. But we're working hard at it.
Any follow-up? Members, any further questions for the Secretary? Seeing none, thank you, Secretary, for your presentation
today.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you to your team. All right, members, next up, we have Deputy Chief Financial Officer Scott Fennell from Department of Financial Services.
I got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Scott Fennell. I'm the Deputy Chief Financial Officer for CFO Jimmy Patronis. That's my budget chief, Terry Madsen. She's happy to be here, too. Really excited to be here to talk you guys through the 2024-25 CFO's budget request. There we go. So as you can see on the slide, our total request for 24-25 is $322.5 million and an additional 26 full-time positions. The vast majority of that is made up of $285 million in general revenue, which is mostly non-recurring general revenue for both the My Safe Florida Home program and the Florida Palm project. The remainder is $37.3 million in trust fund authority, which about $23.2 million of that is non-recurring authority we're asking for. I'm going to break this presentation up into kind of three areas. One being the Florida state of Florida's accounting systems. The next one being the My Safe Florida Home program. And then I'll get into the details of our operational needs for the department, operational infrastructure needs for the department. Okay, so many of you guys are aware that since 2014, the state of Florida has been working to replace our existing mainframe legacy accounting system called FLAIR. The project is called, as it says up there, Planning, Accounting, and Ledger Management, or Florida PALM, which is going to be a cloud-based solution that's housed inside Oracle's PeopleSoft technology. We've made good progress to date. We've gotten all of our cash management functionalities within the Florida PALM project. After a slight restart, we are now in the process of designing our financial and payroll waves of that project. And then in January of 2026, the plan is to launch fully the Florida PALM project, which would bring all functionality of FLAIR into Florida PALM and will be off and running in the cloud. We are asking for the 24-25 year, for the implementation contract, $46.4 million. And then additionally, we're asking for $1.9 million for a service management tool that would help us with tracking tickets and items that we need to remediate within the system, and then $1.5 million for any contract contingencies that come up during the fiscal year as we manage the implementation. In addition to the work and the dollars we're asking for the project itself, the department is requesting about $4.6 million to prepare our existing applications and also our processes for the transition. So just like every other state agency, Department of Financial Services has to also be prepared to implement Florida PALM once it comes live. Included in that, we've got about $550,000 for the eventual decommission of the FLAIR system. So we're preparing our existing accounting system to be shut down when we go live with Florida PALM. We're asking for $3 million in total to document, remediate, in many cases eliminate business systems that we have currently that are connected to FLAIR, to be prepared to connect to Florida PALM. This includes internal business systems, but also some externally managed ones. We've got the P-Card Works program, which we manage in the state of Florida, and then also our system Origami, which is our risk management information system. Those all have to connect to the new accounting system. And the last item that we have is, it's in the middle there, it's $575,000 to actually assist our department with the project management of the transition and also prepare our staff for the new way they're gonna have to do business. This is gonna be a completely different way that Florida operates from an accounting perspective, both at the finance level, but also internally with us with the accounting and auditing division. Now I'm gonna talk briefly about the My Safe Florida Home program. We're asking for $225.8 million in non-recurring general revenue from the My Safe Florida Home program. You guys are probably well aware, but it's a wind mitigation program that provides grants for individuals to harden their single family homes against future wind damage. And then the hopeful end result is a reduction in insurance rates. It helps pay for hardening of roofs, hurricane impact windows and doors, and then hurricane shutters for windows and doors. We're asking for $200 million for the grants themselves. And we're also asking for $17.3 million in inspections that occur prior to grant application. And then finally, $8.5 million for administration and outreach to make sure people are aware of the program that's out there. Okay, so now we're gonna get into the more details of the department's budget. So I'll refer to this as our operational needs. In the IT world, we are asking for approximately $9 million. Some of those items that are listed on here are placeholders, so that number will shift a little as we get more solid dollars, and we'll work with staff to make sure they're aware of what the actual amount is. We're asked for $2.7 million to replace all of our enterprise data storage throughout the department, and then three of our seven Oracle database servers that are all gonna be reaching end of life either in 2024 or 2025. We're asking for $1.6 million to replace all of our local area network switches. So all of our network switches across all our 34 buildings are all reaching end of life. And not only do we need to replace those, but the newer switches have better cybersecurity technology. So it'll help us also protect our systems. In the current year, we're actually received funding to replace our outdated customer relationship management system. So we have a request then for this year for $1.5 million starting in 2024-25 to operate and maintain that system after it's implemented. So that's what that request is for. We are requesting about $1.13 million for contractual price increases. We all are shifting to cloud-based services. And as you know, as you renew those cloud-based services, prices tend to go up. They don't tend to go down. So we've looked at our last year price increases and the price increases we're expecting in this year and seeing this year, and it comes to a total of $1.13 million for those software services. We need to remove our workers' compensation applications off of our mainframe. Our mainframe is where we house Flare, our existing accounting system, and that'll be the last DFS application suite that is on that mainframe. So we're looking at $1.5 million to actually migrate those applications to different places. And so as we've talked about and DMS talked about with cybersecurity, we did a cybersecurity review within this year and received recommendations. So we're asking for $700,000 to implement a cybersecurity vulnerability management program, which will help us learn how to detect and learn how to remediate situations as they come up in the cybersecurity world. And then the $1 placeholder we have for the collateral administration program. We know we need to modernize this program. We received funding last year to do a feasibility study in order to tell what exactly the best path forward is. That's expected and due by November 15th to you, to the committee and the Senate. And so at that point, we'll know what we expect the cost to be to modernize that system. And then finally, from IT, we are proposing to eliminate 8 full-time positions and transition those funds over to contracted services. Staff AUG, it's often referred to as Flare gets closer and closer to the end when we're going to decommission it, it's harder and harder to keep full-time people on. They realize their job's going away. So we're bringing on Staff AUG to help maintain that system so we know it can continue to operate. As everyone's aware, CFO is the state fire marshal. So within the division of state fire marshal, we are asking for approximately $3 million for operational needs. I'll get into infrastructure requirements or requests at the end of the presentation. But for operational needs, we first are asking for 6 additional positions and about $870,000 for additional staffing. This increase is due to demand increases. There's more safety inspections being requested at our firehouses. We have a community risk reduction program in place, and we have seen a vast increase in the amount of grants that we're getting to send down to local firehouses for various needs. So staffing for that is critical. We are responsible for the urban search and rescue operations for the state of Florida, and so we're asking for funds for training and equipment to train those individuals that work in those search and rescue operations. One of the things that we're going to be doing with that is a large-scale annual training event, bringing forward lots of different USAR teams to train together to be prepared to respond to a major disaster. We're asking for $1.1 million in funding. Moving on. So we're asking for $630,000, which is also kind of a placeholder. That's what our feasibility study said we would need to continue to operate and maintain our continuing education system in the fire marshal's office. We are procuring that new system this year, which again, thank you, we've got funding to do so. It's very important, it tracks all firefighters' certifications and education as they go on throughout the state of Florida. We've got $105,000 for a notification system at the State Fire College. Right now we have a lot of students and instructors at the State Fire College that if there's an emergency situation, we have to make sure we can get in touch with them as they're out and about on the grounds. And then we're asking for an increase in our maintenance and repairs. As you'll see in our fiscal capital outlay request, our infrastructure request, the State Fire College is a little old, and so it does need a lot of love and support. So we're asking for an increase in that maintenance and repairs so we can keep things working there. Division of Accounting and Auditing, who processes and pays all the bills and payroll, is looking to add in a vendor payment registration system or program. Right now, we do a lot of that manually when vendors come in to get them registered to pay and get their electronic fund transfers set up. So we're looking to bring on a system that can not only have some self-service for those vendors, but also validate and verify using databases that we are talking to the right person and we're getting the right financial banking information. Similarly, the Division of Unclaimed Property is looking to bring in a front-end digital identity solution. So this would be a little more robust look at individuals asking for unclaimed property, bouncing that also off of databases prior to them even submitting a claim form. So this would come in early, making sure we're talking to the right person. There's a lot of information out there online that people can find about people nowadays, and so we need to make sure that we got an actual person who owns that property. Division of Risk Management is our self-insurance operation. They've got a series of contracts that they utilize to do what they do. And so as we re-procure contracts and embedded in existing contracts, there's cost escalators. You'll see there's a series of those that are up there that need additional dollars, additional authority to cover those increased costs for re-procurement, or some of them are just embedded in existing contracts. And then there's an additional $322,000 that we're expecting from the Office of Attorney General. They've sent us a message that their rates are going up, so we need additional authority to spend that money. And the Division of Rehab and Liquidation, as we've talked about in the state for a while with the insurance market, having the struggles that it has had in the past with receiverships increasing, we've had to increase staff. With staff, we need space. So we're looking for additional space for rental costs for that operation. So Consumer Assistance and Agent Agency Services is asking for two different items. The first one is an increase for agent and agency licensing services of 10 FTEs and about $820,000. We have seen an increase of 70% of license applications in the past 10 years while our staffing levels have actually gone down as we've gotten more efficient. So we've gotten to a point where we need to bulk that up again to respond to the demand. And then for consumer assistance, we're asking for $82,000 for a trailer. As you guys are aware, we go and do insurance villages after hurricanes. And so it would be helpful to have something to transport all the supplies and have the connectation points that we need in a trailer that would be able to get internet access to help people apply for insurance claims or whatever they might need to get information on. For the Division of Funeral and Cemetery Services, we are asking for four positions and $315,000. And this is, again, and due to workload with investigations and monitoring of cemeteries and funeral establishments. We just don't have the staff to maintain the level that we need to meet that requirement. Public assistance fraud is the division that works to verify that public benefits are not being misused. Right now, we have a shortage of vehicles in our fleet. They do pull their cars, but we do need additional 14 vehicles in order to make sure that field investigators have the ability to go out when they need to and do those investigations. And then we're asking for seven positions and $520,000 for seven FTEs. Right now we use OPS staff to do special investigative work on SNAP benefits. And it's hard to keep OPS staff on and after they're trained. So we're looking to convert those essentially to full-time positions so we can maintain them. I went too far. Okay. For workers' compensation, a very similar story. As population increases, all of our divisions that do regulation work and investigative work are finding that their staffing levels aren't adequate. So we're asking for three FTEs and $272,000 for additional staff to do monitoring audits of medical claims, providing that happens through workers' comp insurance to make sure that the citizens are getting the services they need. And then we're asking for $500,000 for contracted services. Essentially, we had two rule challenges in the last couple years. We were successful in defending them, but we know they're being appealed, so we're going to need to utilize outside counsel in order to maintain that defense. So in the area of law enforcement, I've kind of broken it up into three different areas. Disaster and explosive device response is the first one. And we are asking for about $1.8 million in disaster response and explosive device response. And I wanted to mention that not a lot of people realize that we're essentially the state of Florida's arson and explosive ordnance device investigation units for the state. Only five counties out of the 67 actually have arson investigators, official units. So we pretty much respond to the entire state when there is any kind of arson, when there's a potential explosive device, And so these are some of the things that we are asking for in order to maintain continuing responding to that. The first item on there is $101,000 to maintain and update our fleet of unmanned aerial systems. These are essentially drones that go up and can look at an area that's had an explosive issue or fire and evaluate it from the sky. This is part of our refreshing of that. We're also asking for $700,000 essentially to replace two vehicles. They're statewide response vehicles. They do respond statewide. We house them in various central locations in the state, and they're equipped to go into fire and explosive issue areas and perform those investigations. We are asking for $542,000 to purchase two new Bobcat mini excavators and then two new prime movers, also similar situation to respond to those times when there is a fire or explosive incident. And then $231,000 to update the technology, the software, essentially for our robots. They are called explosive ordnance disposal robots, and we're essentially trying to move them from analog to digital, and that'll give our investigators better camera activity, better, clearer pictures, but also they can view those pictures from a farther away distance with the digital services, so they're not as close to where the incident was. So it's a safety issue as well. Keeping with safety, we're asking for additional dollars of $113,000 for health maintenance screenings. We do these for some of our sworn officers. This will cover the rest of our sworn officers to make sure that they get an early maintenance screening for health, and then we follow up annually to kind of check in and make sure that everything's, that they're still healthy and they don't have any concerns. The final issue for disaster and explosive device is we're asking for $80,000 to purchase eight essentially shipping containers that and related supplies that we're gonna turn into training centers, and they're reusable. So we'll go in, set a fire, let the investigators go try and figure out what the accelerant was, what caused the fire, and we can reuse those. Those are actually housed at the State Fire College, even though they're used by our arson investigators. Next area of law enforcement I've kind of summarized as investigation and administration. We're asking for a total of $4 million for these items. $1.2 million is for rental increase, so a pretty large chunk of that. Our South Florida office, we were in DMS space, but due to just flooding, leakage, and just general deteriorating conditions, we're having to transition to private space. It's South Florida, so as you guys can be probably assume, the cost is gonna be a lot higher. So we need another $1.2 million for that. We're asking for $1 million more in training funds. Our law enforcement officers not only have to train the standard law enforcement training, but because of the type of investigations they do, there's a lot of specified industry standards that we have to maintain and certifications that we maintain. So we really end up spending a lot more than we have in our budget. So we're asking to kind of bring that up for that law enforcement training. We are asking for $584,000 to replace 98 of what we call our rugged laptops. Those are those laptops that the investigators and law enforcement officers take out with them. Some of them have to be mounted on vehicles, and then 30 tablet devices. And this is all part of our replacement cycle. We are requesting $744,000 for a cloud-based digital evidence storage system. Right now, we have a very hodgepodge way of storing video interviews, photographs, evidence such of that nature. And it's hard to kind of find and share and respond to public records. So we're looking to go to a cloud-based solution that'll be across the entire division. We're looking to bring all of our sworn law enforcement officers onto the Smart Cop initiative, which provides a lot of access, real-time access to databases for law enforcement, also GPS location services in case they're in danger. And we're asking for a full-time position to come on to manage that new expanded program once we get all of our law enforcement on it. And then finally, for investigation and administration, we've got $75,000 for public education. We've realized over time that we really need to get the word out of what our Division of Investigation does and what services we can offer citizens. And so this will provide a little bit of money to be able to do that public outreach. The final area in law enforcement is our forensic lab. We do own and run Arson Forensic Lab here in the state of Florida. We are asking for a total of about $818,000 for the lab. Some of it, $363,000, is for equipment that we need, lab equipment that's reached end of life that we have to replace. There's a fire debris and explosive analysis instruments that need to be replaced, and also we utilize ovens to heat items up, and that's how we can tell what kind of accelerant or chemical was included in that fire or explosive device. We're also asking for furniture replacement for the Arsenal Lab and audio-video equipment. The furniture is due to a mold intrusion issue that we had. We had a roof leak. The building's kind of old. We fixed that, got the mold out, but we realized that it has infiltrated the furniture, so we have to replace that furniture. And then we are a criminal justice certified instruction entity, and so we need to upgrade our audiovisual equipment there so we can perform the training that we can now do. And then similar to what we had before with repair and maintenance, we're looking to increase the amount we've asked in the past for repair and maintenance because the building is more than 30 years old and costs have gone up. So in order to maintain the building and keep it operational, we're asking for $155,000 additional for that. And the final thing on this slide and the final thing for operational until we get to infrastructure is a department-wide issue. It spans multiple divisions. Essentially, we realized that due to inflation, our expense budget has not maintained the cost of items that we have to purchase. We've been doing 5% budget transfers for many years. However, we don't have the salary budget any longer, also due to inflation and trying to recruit and retain individuals. So we're asking for, across the whole department, $1.4 million broken out in various different divisions. So for fixed capital outlay, these are all of our infrastructure projects. We have a total of about $14.8 million. The two largest ones obviously are gonna be the State Fire College, and then we have a request for $6 million for our Larson and Fletcher Building restrooms. The Larson and Fletcher buildings are just south of the Capitol. They're very old. The restrooms haven't been renovated in 20 years. They're not ADA compliant. They've got equipment that's deteriorating. And so we're asking for $6 million. We did get that number from Department of Management Services, and they would manage the project, but it's important. We're at the bottom of the list. We're trying to get it to the top, so we're asking for those funds. And then we've got $8.65 million for the State Fire College. We've got a long-term plan for renovating the State Fire College, as a lot of organizations have, kind of a deferred maintenance concept. We've got a lot of stuff that we know we need to do. These are the three things we're asking for in 24-25. We've got the first one being $1.75 million to renovate the auditorium. It's a 5,000 square foot auditorium. It's used for large classes, for commencement, for large speaking opportunities. And it needs furniture, light fixtures, audio video equipment, all the various things inside of that. We've got the State Fire College courtyard renovations. This is the main walkway between the buildings at the State Fire College. It also houses the Fallen Firefighter Memorial. And that, due to damage from rain and root lifting the concrete, we have a lot of flooding, it's not really accessible in a lot of spots, so we're looking for money to repair that. And then probably our top priority with those, even though it's at the third bullet, is all of our roofs at the five buildings have gotten to a point to where they're not repairable. They've been certified as not repairable, so we're asking for $3.4 million to replace all the roofs of all the five buildings. And the last one's actually a small item, but important. It's a we're asking for $127,000 for three covered shelters and pole barns, which will be placed at the Fire College, but this is also for our arson and investigators and our explosive ordnance investigators to use to train out of the sun, out of the elements, also to store equipment that right now is just out in the open. And that is my presentation, Madam Chair. I'll happily answer any questions.
Thank you, Deputy CFO. Members, are there any questions for, all right, Representative Nixon, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 11, I just had a question in regards to the rental cost. I know you stayed a year there in Miami. You had to move to a private facility. Have you had conversations with, like, any of the public universities or colleges to see if you all could utilize space in those buildings?
I don't have the answer to that question. I do know we worked, as we were required to, with DMS's brokerage services. So I don't know if they look to the universities and state colleges down there when they look for space. I assume they do. But let me find out if they specifically asked for that, and I'll get back to you.
Follow-up, Representative Nixon. No. Representative Edmonds, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for your amazing presentation. If you can just go back to the My Safe Florida page.
Yep.
I got to tell you, that was one of the most beneficial grants that I think the legislature put out or refunded. Because we're a coastal district, many of my residents took advantage of it. Do you have any data or breakdown on what residents, what areas took advantage of that program?
And Representative, we will have later on a presentation specifically on the My Safe Florida Home program that will go into depth.
You asked a question.
All right.
Madam Chair.
So we'll save that for a later date then. Thank you. And then Representative Holcomb, you were next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick statement and a question. For those who are watching at home, there's just a massive amount of dollars that we have to spend as a government, and the counties have to do the same thing just to keep folks safe, whether it's cybersecurity, keeping systems safe, or the area you're focusing on is fire and investigations and manpower and equipment. So it's just shocking to me sometimes when you see all the numbers, what we got to do to keep people safe. But my question's in regard to the Palm Project. We got an update on that last session, and there was some serious concerns about the project. If you could just spend another minute or two on how things have gone since last session and some of the achievements, maybe.
Sure.
Deputy CFO.
Thank you. Sorry, Madam Chair. So I can say that, yes, there were concerns with the direction the Palm Project was going. We took a pause and reevaluated the direction that we were heading. We amended our contract to alleviate a lot of those concerns. I believe we alleviated all of them. We validated, that was one of the big things, and the big issues was the cash management accounting functions that moved over, were they actually working the way they were supposed to? So we did the fixes that we needed to do and then validated that, yes, they are accurately recording all of our cash management transactions. And so now we're at the point where we are planning we're designing the financials on the payroll side, and so that process is ongoing. They've added a lot of, a lot of testing to the plan to ensure that agencies have the time to make sure that when we implement something that's actually working, we might have rushed testing in the past, and that was one of the other criticisms.
Follow-up, Representative Holcomb.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm good.
Okay. All right, Representative Robinson, you're recognized. Do you need a minute?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to go in a little bit of detail on page 11 when you talked about the $75,000 for the public outreach. Can you kind of give us an idea of what that's going to look like? Is it going to be a...
Madam Chair?
Deputy, go ahead.
So I really can't. I'm guessing, honestly, a lot of, like, brochures, things like that. $75,000 is not going to buy you a whole lot of outreach. It's just we don't have any budget at all to get any information out to the citizens right now. So we're looking to get a little something so we can produce some materials that we can share.
Representative Robinson, follow-up?
No, just wanted to know how he's doing.
Thank you. Representative Maney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to get down in the weeds. I was questioning what the $322,000 or whatever it was, the fees that you pay the Attorney General. If you know what that is, I'd like to know. If you don't know, I'm happy to talk to you offline.
Deputy CFO?
Thank you. I think we will bring someone to talk to you in more detail offline. I'm probably not the best person, but we do utilize the services of the Attorney General's office for some of our legal work that we have to do as an insurance company. Obviously, we get sued a lot as a state, and we defend state employees and state officials. So for certain situations, we utilize the Attorney General's office, and we have that baked into our recurring budget. They're increasing their hourly rate, and so we have to ask for additional dollars to make up for that difference. But I can get someone to talk to you more specifically about what types of cases they do for us.
Follow-up, Representative Maney.
Thank you. Yes, please have somebody come chat with me. I'm curious, the follow-up will be how effectively that works in prosecuting insurance fraud around the state.
Deputy CFO.
Thank you. Just to be clear, the risk management operations that they do is not the area where we investigate or prosecute insurance fraud. This is really our self-insurance program. So someone sues us, essentially, sues the state of Florida. They come in as the insurance company and either pay the claim, because it's a valid claim, or successfully defend the claim against whoever's making the thing. We also run our workers' compensation insurance, so state employee falls on the job, hurts themselves, we'll cover making sure that they get the proper medical care. So really, those legal fees are more aligned to that. We don't internally do prosecutions on insurance fraud. We do the investigation side and then turn it over to prosecutors. So,
thank you. This will be the last one. That's what I want to get at, is to find out what the department is paying to prosecutors to take your investigations and go after bad actors or alleged bad actors? That's what I want to look at, please.
Deputy CFO, any follow-up?
Yeah, we'll get back to you, and I don't know that we typically pay a lot. I think there is an annual... Yeah, maybe $5 million between everything, because that's their role is to prosecute those. But we're happy to come talk to you in more detail about how that works and what we could do maybe even better.
Thank you. Representative Maggard, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It's really for everybody who presented today, and I want to add on to Representative Holcomb. There was a lot of large numbers today, and I think us as a government got to be a little concerned here. Things are good in Florida, but they may not be coming. You know, you have inflation here. We're increasing government size, and I think it's important for us to look at that. Businesses get in trouble when times are good, not when times are bad. We should always run our business and our government like times are bad. And like Representative Holcomb said, we threw around millions of dollars here like it was pocket change. And I get concerned about that when the government agencies do that. And I think we as a committee need to take that seriously and look at this. Are these things that are needed, or these are wants? And I think this is part of why they come to this committee. And I'm just throwing out winds of caution here.
Representative, did you have a question for the deputy CFO at this time?
Yeah, $6 million for a bathroom.
Madam Chair?
Is it a question or?
Yeah, it's a question.
Okay. All right. Deputy CFO.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a big number. That's no doubt. And it comes directly from the Department of Management Services that does this. We do have, I think it's 16 bathrooms in one building and 32 in the other. And they do have to come up to ADA compliance, which can be costly. But yeah, that's a large number. Contract costs, you know, contracting costs are going up, as you know. And so it's important. And, you know, want and need is obviously the committee's discretion to make that decision, but it is important. It's a situation. I invite you to come join us in the Larson Fletcher Building and tour the facilities. And
field trip, Representative Maggard? Did you have a follow-up question?
I always like going to the bathroom. How many bathrooms are you renovating for $6 million?
Deputy CFO?
Thank you, Madam Chair. About 50 total.
50?
Yeah.
Representative Maggard, follow-up question?
I'm good.
Anyone have a bathroom question? Okay. All right, Representative Steele, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Great presentation. I just have a couple of comments, and then maybe you can, you know, elaborate on my comments. The POMS system, as Holcomb talked about earlier, is that a SaaS model? Are we going to be getting updates systematically so you don't have to do a revamping of the system again?
Deputy CFO?
Yes, correct. It's Oracle's PeopleSoft, which they will update as it goes along. And we are focusing pretty strongly as best we can to minimize the customizations to that software solution so those updates and upgrades are take less work so we don't have to go in and fix any customization. So, yes, it will be updated.
Follow-up, Representative?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So they should be providing you a ticketing system. We shouldn't actually have to go out and buy one to track the changes. That's what a software integrated solution should provide. So, correct.
Deputy
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, so to clarify, what the ticketing system I was talking about is not for upgrades or changes to the system, but when users have questions and concerns or requests. So it's our method to track a user at an agency needs help getting something done or doesn't know how to do something or would like to see something change. This is how we track all of that.
Follow-up, Representative?
Yes. And I know that we talked that we're going to have a bigger presentation on MySafe Florida. I think we need to look into that. We have a lot of fraud that's happening and a lot of senior citizens being taken advantage of because of our good need and program that we provided. There's actually organizations out there that are charging double the amount on senior citizens and putting liens against their homes. So I know somebody personally that happened to, so. We should look into that. And then I understand that we're moving from to the cloud, but you talked about having some servers that we have to replace. Is it a private cloud or a public cloud that we're moving to?
Madam Chair.
Deputy, you're recognized.
Thank you. We are moving as much as we can to the cloud. We actually have a current project we're working on now to kind of do a strategy on how we would move our internal applications that we have on our internal servers to the cloud. So we're kind of a blend at DFS. We've got a decent amount of servers that are on-premise, but we also are shifting a lot of our stuff to the cloud. So as the Northwest Regional Data Center is looking at their potential shift to the cloud, we're also kind of trailing along with them to make sure that we are doing it the right way. Right now we still do have on-premise servers that we need to maintain and to repurchase, unfortunately, because they are end of life. But we are looking at a strategy for how we can move on to the cloud.
Follow-up, Representative Steele.
One last one. Look into PKI for cybersecurity. I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all, but DOJ and the DOD and all the big organizations that haven't been hacked use that. And they do state-level stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Chamberlain, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just maybe a general question for understanding. I'm looking at the $200 million figure for the hurricane mitigation grants. Just curious, is there a chance that 100% gets spent depending on the hurricane activity of the year, is there a chance that $100 million of it may not need to be spent? How does that work?
Deputy CFO?
Yeah, for this program, this is the heart in the homes prior to an event, and it will all get spent. I could say that because we kept the spigot on from the current year funding that we got, even though we got to a point to where we allocated all the current year funding that we had of $215 million. We've kept the applications coming, so the inspections have been done, applications coming. We already have $176 million of that allocated. So if it's not funded, then we don't award the grants. If it is funded, we've already spent $176 million of that to make sure that the individuals that got in first, they don't have to reapply.
And this is the program that we're going to go into more depth later on with its own presentation.
Okay, thank you on that.
Any other questions?
Yes, please.
Thank you. You're recognized. Chair.
Maybe it's a general question, kind of like what I asked before. Things like the legacy accounting system and cash management system, $46 million. Is there a time frame on that? Or is it a 10-year transition, a one-year transition?
Deputy CFO?
Thank you. There is a time frame on that. We have a brand new timeline. Right now, the launch date to go live is January of 2026. So we should be, if everything works the way we've timelined it out, we should be launching with all state agencies on Florida Palm in January of 2026. That means all county functionality we currently have is on board 26. There is additional functionality that the PeopleSoft application can do that we'll make a decision then whether we continue on utilizing that and whether we stop and wait to implement anything like that. So yes, there is a timeline.
Follow-up, Representative Chamberlain.
One last question. Thank you, Madam Chair. The cloud-based solutions that you have, there's security questions that come up when we talk about clouds all the time. You know, I get asked questions, I'm sure you do as well. I'm curious, are these U.S.-based cloud solutions, and were they out of the U.S.? That would be a question that I'm sure people would want to know. And are they Florida-based companies? Are we looking for Florida? There may be companies here that can handle it for us, or are we sending them elsewhere? Just curious.
Deputy CFO?
Thank you. They are in the U.S. where our cloud operations are located. As you guys are aware, cloud's not really up in the, these are server farms that are owned by companies, and we do space them out across the United States, and you do that on purpose because if there's a geographical incident, you want to make sure that you can maintain operations. So, no, we don't have any of those operating in the state of Florida. We do utilize Florida-based companies a lot for our IT services. A lot of these companies, though, they're global. And so where they're housed, their main headquarters, they have operations in all various states and countries. So we all of our cloud-based solutions, where we're storing our data and processing it, is in the U.S. Not all of them are Florida-based companies.
Thank you.
Members, any further questions for the Deputy CFO? All right, seeing none, thank you, Deputy CFO, for your presentation today. This concludes our agenda. Seeing no further business, Representative Chamberlain has a motion. He moves, we rise.
I do.
Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.